Hey everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. Thank you for joining us tonight and for just joining us on this month of we're talking about reporting and testing and all those things that we want to do to wrap up the end of the year or maybe get ready for a new school year. A lot of people start their school year in the summer. And so if you do year-round schooling, this is kind of the time to reevaluate whatever schooling option you choose. And so we are excited to have another wonderful guest speaking to us tonight about this subject. And her name is Ellen Crane, and she's with Affordable Homeschool Testing. Welcome, Ellen.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We're going to talk about the MAP test, which I had never heard about until we had started talking. And so I'm really excited to learn more and excited for you to share with our audience just what the MAP test is. We're going to talk about that, but we're also going to talk about how to interpret the results, which I don't think a lot of parents who do testing don't even use the results. They sometimes only do it just because it's required. And then I'm guilty of this. That's what I did is I put it in a folder and said, oh, that's nice. I kind of already knew that. And then just went on. But if you're paying that money, you know, you might as well use the results. Exactly, for something. Mm-hmm. So you are a homeschool mom as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your family?
Yes. Well, I live with my husband and our three kids here in Minnesota. We are out in Wyoming, Minnesota, a little bit north of the Twin Cities. Yeah. I have three kids. My oldest, Beckett, is graduating this year, and he's headed off to the University of Minnesota. Mm. And then my middle child is Alice, and she's a junior. She's heading into her senior year. And then my baby, the family, is 13 now. And he's, he's just finishing up seventh grade. So I'm kind of seeing the end of that homeschool career and looking for the next thing and how I can contribute to the homeschool community.
So is that how your website and your testing started, or was it somewhere before that?
Well, it was two things. It was definitely sort of thinking about, the nature of homeschooling is that we work ourselves out of a job.
Yes.
And so I was thinking about what I would do next. Mm. And then the other is, as I live in here in Minnesota, we have to test every year. And I noticed that, the tests that we were using seemed pretty old. And my son, who was born in 2006, had Google his whole life, was asked a question where the answer was, it was about a paper phone directory. And he doesn't know directories. And that kind of thing, it made me think, why is it that we're taking such old tests? Right. And I looked into it and discovered that there are other tests out there that have been, the tests that homeschoolers mostly use are older tests that are paper-based, and they kind of date back to when we were in school, before they had No Child Left Behind and these other changes that led schools away from the nationally normed end of year tests. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, there's been some really wonderful advances in these interim tests, which is what my test, you can take it at the end of the year. It works really well for that, but it's designed to be taken as much as three times a year to track practice. And that is, some people test that often, some people don't. It depends on what's going on in your family, but they've done a lot of work with those kinds of tests, and I think it really does work out to be a better test for homeschool families, because
especially if their child is struggling. Tell parents to evaluate more often, because then you're going to be able to see, is what you're doing effective, or should you change your strategy mid-year, instead of waiting until the end of the year and saying, oh, well, we failed at this all year long.
And,
exactly.
And the other thing that's nice about this kind of test is it's adaptive, and it's designed so it adjusts to the child. So wherever they are, if they're ahead in some areas and maybe behind in some others, they're going to get questions that are appropriate for them, no matter where they are. And it's really designed to measure growth, which is great, because that's what we're here for. Wherever our kids are, we want them to be growing academically.
Right. And so you offer this test to parents nationally. It's you do it through your website, affordabletesting.com.
Is that affordabletest.com?
Yes. And so really any homeschooler, and it's norm referenced, so that's what usually most state standards who require testing require. Mm-hmm. So it kind of meets all of those standards. Yeah.
So it's almost everywhere where people have to test.
Yes, that's great. And especially in the state where you live in, where it is required on a yearly basis. I know because I used to homeschool in Minnesota.
Right.
So our viewers, I just want you to know that as you're watching, if you have questions, definitely put them in the feed if you're watching live, because we want to be interacting with you and make sure that Ellen gets any of the questions that you have, and she can answer them right here on the spot instead of having to answer them later. And so then hopefully, probably the questions you have are going to be questions that somebody else would have as well. And mm-hmm. we're going to try to hit some of the main ones, but definitely if you want that question answered, put it in the feed and we'll get that addressed. So, mm-hmm. So let's dive into this. What is the MAP test? And this is the test that we were talking about.
Yes. The MAP test, it's sometimes called the Measures of Academic Progress or the NWEA or the NWEA or MAP Growth. It has a lot of names because it's taken about 1 in 4 school kids in the U.S. right now take the MAP test.
Oh, really? What do the schools use it for? Do they use it as an end of year test or do they use it as a progress test?
They use it as a progress test. They use it some to measure, to sort of, the kids will take it in the fall and the spring to to see how they did for the year. And teachers get the results a little bit faster than those state-based end of year tests.
Okay.
They'll come out months later. And for this, you get results. Kids get results immediately when they finish the
That's
test.
That's great.
With us. And then we get detailed results to the parents within a couple days. So it's a much quicker turnaround, which means that you can actually use the results. If it's, if you're waiting 3 or 6 weeks, you don't even really remember. And so it's hard to really.
Right. And you want to make the adjustments sooner instead of later.
Exactly. And also if the results aren't what you expected, it's a lot easier to kind of think about what happened if you get those results right away. As opposed to trying to pick it apart.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's an adaptive online test. And so we'll take it. The first couple questions will be about grade level. And then if they're getting questions right, then the questions get harder. And if they're getting questions wrong, then they get easier. And for kids who are working below grade level, the system really works to get kind of underneath where their performance is and then move up so that nobody gets frustrated.
Right. Well, that's good. So does the parent then kind of say where they think their child's at? Is that where it starts? Or do you pick something on the test to say this is kind of where the test should start? Or is it just ask questions to get you there?
Usually we require that parents give us a grade level. And for parents that don't use grade levels, because not everybody does. We just say, whatever they would be, what grade they would be in your local public school, just as a jumping off point.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's really just the first few questions, the first test they take. And then after that, it's all based on their performance in the tests before that. So it'll,
Neat. So compared to other tests that are out there, what is the same? What is different about the MAP test?
Let's see. Well, some things that are the same. It is a nationally norm reference test. It's a test that school administrators generally know about. But the main thing that's different is most of the tests that homeschoolers take are, we call them fixed tests. So there's a collection of questions that are based on your child's grade level.
Right.
And so if they're working well above or well below grade level or a mix, which happens a lot in homeschooling. They may not be being asked the right questions for them. And that can either be really boring or really frustrating.
Right. Exactly.
And also it means that you don't get the results that are really useful because you know, if you have a kid who's a high flyer and they get every right, well, that doesn't really tell you anything. You know, like, okay, so they blew third grade out of the water. Where are they? And if you know that they're struggling, well, you already, you know, that doesn't help either. So
and, the test adapts then if they're doing really well, then it, like you said, it moves them up. And so then they can score in different levels.
Right.
They aren't going to just like max out on that one grade level. And like you said, you won't know where that they could maybe have increased three grade levels in this subject and be down another grade level on this subject.
Yeah.
So that's, that's very useful information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are sub threads within each subject. So if you have a kid who say struggles with calculation, but really understands algebraic thinking, they'll get easier questions with computation and harder questions with algebraic thinking. So you know right where they are. And then we give them, just tons of specific learning statements about the kinds of things they're ready to learn next.
Mm-hmm. So I got a question from Michelle. She says, sorry, came in late. That's okay. You're welcome anytime. you made it. Yep. Parent is the monitor. So she's wanting to know, does a parent monitor it? Is it online, oral? What are the options for that?
Okay. Well, the parent does need to supervise. Technically, we proctor it, but we do require that there is an adult present to supervise the test. It's an online test. It's the computer reads at the K to 2 level. And then for older kids, if they're dyslexic or if they have a special need that makes it appropriate, but there's a text-to-speech option that we can turn on so that older kids who aren't yet reading can still test independently.
That's good to know.
Yeah, it's a real game changer for a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that question, Michelle. That was definitely a good one. So we were talking about it in comparison to other tests. Now, you had talked about some older tests. I'm assuming that the information in this test is not going to ask them about a phone directory.
No,
but it's a little more updated.
Yes. We offer the same test that is given to public school students right now, because it's an online test and they have thousands of test items, we're able to use the most up-to-date version. A lot of times homeschoolers, especially if you're getting a paper test booklet, the test publishers limit you to a generation older than they're using in schools just because they
have
test security. They don't want,
they don't want somebody just ordering it and then giving out answers.
Exactly. So that's because because of the way that it's designed, we can use the most up-to-date version. And that's, it's a nice feature. Yeah.
Yeah. Michelle, I have one more question about cost, and I know it's right on your website.
Yes.
So
we charge $60 for the first child and then $45 after that. So we try to be about the same as similar.
And is that the cost if they do it multiple times a year?
We do charge each time.
Okay.
So,
Well, that's good to know.
Right.
Okay. But something you can work in. And it's, you know, it's definitely worth it. If you are tracking your child for like an IEP or if they're working with therapists and they want to know where your student is at in different levels, instead of you trying to do all these other things, just to administer this test once or twice or three times a year and say, okay, we're monitoring this, you know, we're seeing progress in all these areas. So definitely worth it.
Yeah. And it's also, it can be helpful in choosing curriculum and kind of deciding if things are working the way that you want them to work. For really any kid.
Mm-hmm.
But
I can see that. So we got into some of the one question that Michelle asked about logistics is, how it's administered by the parent, you said, but it's online. It's proctored by you. So how does that work out? Do you have to actually schedule the test then with you?
Yes. We have, we test Monday through Friday, and parents can go to our website and we ask them to choose their start times. We do one subject a day because it adjusts to the level where the student's getting about half of the questions right and half of the questions wrong. So they're working right at the top of their ability level and it's tiring. So we do about one subject a day. It's usually about an hour each day and 2 or 3 days, depending. We have a grammar test that's optional.
Okay.
So,
Yeah, and there's one more question that Michelle had, and she said turnaround time, and I know we had addressed this, but definitely would like you to answer her question as to what's the turnaround on the results.
Okay, well, when a student tests, as soon as they finish a subject test, you get some raw scores. You get the RIT score, which we can talk about later, and a Lexile level right away for the reading test. Mm-hmm. And then we get you the complete detailed score report, which is often anywhere from 30 to 60 pages long.
Wow.
And you get that within 2 days of finishing the test.
Okay. Yeah, so that's a lot of data you got there.
Yes. It can be a little overwhelming, but I figure more is better than, too much is better than too little.
Right. And if you are doing this on a frequent basis and you can compare and contrast, that is definitely helpful. So what other types of questions do you get from parents as far as logistics of giving the test, taking the test?
Well, one of the things is that we are able to offer a totally on time test. So if you have a kid who wants to answer 10 questions and then go run around the backyard and then come back and answer 10 more, that is fine. We are, and we do occasionally we have kids who just need to split up the tests. Mm-hmm. They need a couple days for each subject, and we're happy to facilitate that too.
That's great.
Yeah, but usually it's a pretty simple test for parents. Parents say that it's really easy for them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they can just break it up however they need to. If people have more than one child, they can, if you have enough computers, they can all test at the same time. If you want to sit right with them, mm-hmm. We're fine with, you can make one appointment for everybody and then just, and they get up and go play, and then you bring the next kid over and call us and we get them logged in and they do that. So we just, whatever works for you. Occasionally we have families that kind of gather all in one person's house, and one mom will supervise the testing and the other one will watch over the little ones. And there are a bunch of different ways to do it, but
those are some great ideas. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. That's wonderful that you can break it up like that. And that's Michelle even said, wow, that's amazing. And then, that would be my kid. I bet that's the running around comment that you made.
Right.
It's hard for them to sit still. And we have so many parents say that, I'm doing testing this week, just like the school would in your home.
Right.
And yet there are other options. And I'm so glad that you're sharing this, Ellen, because I think especially for our kids that are struggle, like you said, they get fatigued or else they naturally have very short attention spans. And so we're already dealing with that when we homeschool them and we know those things. And yet a lot of these tests don't allow for that flexibility to be able to accommodate children that way.
Another neat feature we have is that the computer watches, because sometimes they have more than one kid testing at the same time. If your child starts just rapid fire guessing, we get an alert and we can pause it and give you a call. So you can go and, check in with them and let them know that they need to take their time. And it can, it's another set of eyes so that you're more likely to get good results that you can use. Cause that's really
amazing. That's some really intuitive software. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the answers are C. Definitely.
Yeah.
So what about accommodations? Do parents have to actually tell you that my child has a disability, that they need to be accommodated, or can they just say, this is what we normally use in our homeschool for this student?
We don't require a diagnosis.
Okay.
I do. It depends a little bit on what you're looking for. I like to make sure that parents understand kind of the implications of an accommodation, because obviously a test can only give you results based on what your child did. So we have the text-to-speech option, and that is available. It's really the appropriate thing for kids that read with their ears.
Yeah.
But it does change the interpretation of the reading test. because it's about how they do when text is being read to them. And so you want to think about that when you're deciding which accommodations to ask for. Everyone, we have some kids that have dyscalculia and they will test with a times table. And that's not appropriate for everybody, but it does, you know, when you look at the results, you need to know that that's okay. This is how my child does with a times table. And, you know.
But you're not going to be asking them questions with a times table to get results on what is this times this.
Exactly. But we do allow, let's see, it's untimed for everybody. So you don't need any kind of diagnosis or even to take lots of breaks.
Right.
For the math, for everything but the reading test, any child can have questions read to them. And we're happy to turn on the text-to-speech if they want that. For the reading, I do just try to make sure that the parents understand that it changes the interpretation of the test. It's really appropriate. That is more of a thing where it's appropriate for some kids and probably not others. And at the K to two level where a lot of kids aren't reading, both the reading and the math test are designed for pre-readers. So there's audio support for everyone automatically. And then we allow manipulatives, there's scratch paper we allow. It's a very flexible test. The goal is for the test environment to be a lot like the way that the child is working day to day in school. So,
and that's helpful that the test is then given in the home, because when we were testing, we always went to a tester's house and my kids were so distracted. And here's this person that they only saw every once a year that was asking them these questions. And it was like all in one batch. And then you waited for your brother because it was his turn next. And so this is much less stressful.
Especially for kids that are a little shy around strangers. A lot of times they're more comfortable just answering questions with a computer than having to, you know, go out and interact with a stranger and all of that. And we don't require that parents call in when it's time to log in, and we make sure they understand the rules of that test, you know, what they need to do to get a good result and help them get logged into the system, make sure they don't have any technical issues. But
kids
don't have to talk to us. So yeah. So if you have a kid who's shy, that's not an issue. Yeah.
Well, it's good to have that support, because I think sometimes when you're using a new piece of software, all of us, it's like this, it kind of makes you nervous. At least it does me still. You know, and I used to work with programming things, and it still makes me nervous. So if it makes you nervous and you don't have that technical ability, it's the same for all of us. And so it's nice to know that there's somebody else that's going to be there to answer all your questions as you get set up, instead of just dropping it and sending you a link and saying, good luck. There's a real person on the other side of that.
And we've seen all kinds of technical issues. It's usually pretty seamless, but it's really unusual that we can't talk people through whatever little glitches they're having. So,
Good. Yeah, that sounds great. So let's dive into data. What type of data does this test produce?
Okay. Well, it gives you a few things. It gives you the things that we're used to getting with testing. You'll get a percentile ranking that compares your child to other kids. It's public school kids from 2015.
Okay.
It's a really large norm group. It's hundreds of thousands of kids per grade. So it's it's a really solid norm group. You can believe in it. And it so you'll get a percentile ranking. It's seasonal. So the kids, a question I get a lot is, which grade level should I put my child in if they're, you know, they're rising third graders? And the answer is always that you put in the grade that they would be in school right now. So if you have a child who's finishing second grade and you test in the spring, put down second grade, and we will compare them with other kids at the end of the school, second grade school year.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Okay.
And that works out. But if you test with us in the fall, then you get compared to other kids at the beginning of the school year. So, and then you also get what's called an RIT score, which is NWEA, the test publisher's independent measure of academic achievement. So it's a number, just like, you know, when you measure your child's height, height, there are some heights that are average for different, you know, for this age or that age. Mm-hmm. But if you, when you measure, if you just got percentiles for your child's height, you wouldn't necessarily know whether or not they were growing. And so you get an RIQ score, you can know whether or not they're improving their skills independent of how they compare to everybody else.
Okay.
And
so, then you can compare that RIT score on a yearly basis to have like a baseline of where they're at.
Right. And you can see how they're growing in the different, you get an RIT score for each of the kind of subtopics within the subject. So you can say there, we've made a lot of progress with vocabulary, but maybe we want to pay a little bit more attention to, say, nonfiction comprehension because they're not quite getting that, or you know, whatever it is. And the map testing, because it's adaptive. There's a K through two level. There's a two through five levels. Second grade's a kind of a pivot year where some kids are reading and some kids are not. So you can choose whether they should go high or low. And then we have a six plus level. And occasionally we have a kid who, you know, a first grader who's way ahead and needs to get a 2-5 test or that kind of thing. Right. And like my, the error measurement tells us, okay, wow, this is maybe this child needs to take a different test.
Okay.
And so then I can go and tell the parents and let them know. And we offer retests, free retests in that situation. Okay. So that, because we want everybody to get a good measurement of where their kid is.
So if they're highly gifted in one area, I know my son always got college level in science and then everything else was at his grade level. And it was kind of, it was frustrating because it was like, okay, well, that's the one thing I guess you excel in. I mean, we shouldn't teach it at all, but, but now that's his major in college. And so I don't worry about it, but, but yeah, so that's nice that you offer a retest because there will be some kids who like are off the charts in one subject area. And so
And also, occasionally I have a child where the parent looks at the results and says, okay, this just doesn't mesh with what I'm seeing at home. And of course, when, you know, that frankly, what you're seeing day to day trumps test results all the time. We hope test results do give you useful kind of insight and a good way to compare how they, you know, how what's going on in your home relates to the rest of the world. I find it really useful to know if my kids are roughly at grade level or not, like if I'm going to sign them up for an event, you know, are they able to keep up or whatever. But, you know, if somebody says, okay, no, my child is reading chapter books and this says they can't read, or sometimes that's a question of the, you know, kids, somebody was having an off day or whatever, and we'll offer retests in that situation too. And they can usually, we can turn that around pretty quick.
Okay. Yeah, that would make sense because we do all have off days. A different Michelle is asking a question. She said, I'd love to know if you'd be adding science and social studies to the test. What right now is tested as far as subject-wise? Is science and social studies not covered?
Right now, we offer reading, math, and language usage, which is a grammar and mechanics test. Next year, we will have science. Unfortunately, MAP does not offer, the NWA doesn't offer social studies tests, so I can't add that. But we will have science next year, and we're excited about that.
And it does, I think, with the reading comprehension and understanding concepts in general, a lot of understanding of how your child is taking in, like, science, or not science, but, like, history and those types of subjects is pretty, you know, at least that's what I found with my children is that, you know, if I know that they're comprehending a lot of these things that we're reading about, they're understanding those subjects as well. That because we mostly take them in either through audio books or through reading anyways.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So you've talked about the percentile and the RIT score. Is there anything else?
Yeah. You also get the Lexile level, which is a measurement of that you can use, something you can use to help find books. It gives you a gauge of books that your child can understand but will still challenge them enough to grow.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And we have an article on our website about the Lexile score too. And you can look like for library books or other books with that Lexile score and find, you know, once you have that score, that's nice that you can say, okay, my child can read all of these books at this level.
Yes.
And so that is a very helpful piece of data. So Michelle said, is this just spring or fall testing?
We offer testing in spring, fall, and winter. So we test from August 15th to June 15th.
Good to know. Okay. So any other data? Or is that's definitely enough.
Yes. We give you a kind of a growth a prediction. So we tell you, all right, how many points your child's RIT score in each subject would need to grow to keep them within the percentile range that they're at. And then also what if you're trying to, if you want a stretch goal, what's a reasonable stretch goal?
So that's very helpful.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes we either overestimate or underestimate as parents. And it's nice to maybe have that predictor of, you know, what is possible instead of what number I come up with in my mind.
Exactly. It like gives you a better idea of kind of what's a fair thing to aim for. And so you can start talking to your kids about what you're going to work on and why. Mm-hmm. And then we give you usually anywhere from 30 to 60 pages of learning statements, which are specific skills that you could be working on with your child that are in their ZPD, which is their zone of proximal development. So these are skills that they have the background they need to learn, but they aren't able to, it's not intuitive to them. So that is the range where it is most useful to teach because they need the instruction, but they're ready for it. Yeah.
Right.
And there are a few ways because it's just a ton of information. Probably the best way to use the learning statements is like if you have read a book together as a family and you're trying to think about, okay, what are we going to talk about with this? You can go kind of shopping through your learning statements and say, okay, so in literature, Johnny is ready to talk about character development and how it influences a story. So you can have that conversation with them, and then you can kind of go through for each of your kids about what kinds of things they're ready to learn in the area that you're talking about as a family, or you know, based on what else is going on in their curriculum.
Right.
And it gives you kind of a way to a lot of guidance, really concrete guidance about how to individualize what you're doing with your kids to help them grow.
Right. I love that shopping list, you know, because sometimes you just want to say, okay, let's make this fun and not too too technical. And so especially like when you're doing like just family read out loud to use it in that way, that would be really helpful. So I guess the meat of our discussion is how do we take all this data and individualize instruction for a student?
Right.
And I know do you want me to pull up that page that you said you had on your website, the PDF? Is that?
Sure, we could do that. Yeah, you can see some of the numbers. Yeah, there's also a typical UB score that we give you that shows you.
Let me see if I can put this up above us. There we go.
Okay. It shows you the grade level where your child's score would be average.
Okay.
And so that kind of gives you a little bit of a better feel because even percentiles can be a kind of, they're hard to really understand in a concrete way. So if you know your child is reading like an average fifth grader, well, okay, that now you have some idea what to do with that. It is important when you look at these things to know that there's a difference. This is about average performance and not about meeting standards, because for whatever reason, and in our school systems, about this only kids who are at the 70th percentile, so about the top third, are meeting standards for any particular grade. So the average child is behind in that way. So it's So it's just important to kind of, if you're thinking about, you know, making sure that your child is really ready for college or whatever, that it's maybe not that, you maybe want to dial back a little bit from that typical of score.
Okay.
If you were going to use it for placement.
Mm-hmm. So here it just gives you some, all the information right at the front.
Right. Yeah. And then we've designed that first page to be all the information you would need to give if you have to submit your scores for people who live in states like that.
There are some states.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also includes some links. There are a few things. Khan Academy, which has amazing free math lessons. There's a website you can take your MAP scores and plug them in and get a free customized learning path for your child based on where they, you know, where the test says they are. And there's also a College Explorer tool that you can use that will, it takes the MAP scores and predicts an ACT or SAT score and then tells you, okay, based on where they are now, these are the schools near you that your child is on track for.
Huh. Wow.
So you would, yeah. So, and that can be good for those middle school kids who are maybe not super motivated to get them to start thinking about why it is that we're doing school and what, why it might matter for them. But if they have, you know, visions of going to this or that place or becoming something specific when they grow up.
Right. Yeah. So, I saw that there, those links are on your website.
Right. Yes, they are.
I can't remember which page it was.
There's a pull down for after testing that has that, those.
Right.
Things. Right.
That's it. Yep. And so all of that is on there. And so, so that's nice that they basically, you just put in the score and they give you some ideas of what you can do right from there. And that's a free resource, right?
It's all free. Yes.
There was a reading website as well. I can't remember which one you had. It was
readworks.org is one that I like. And you can, for that, you can plug in your child's Lexile scores and it will give you customized reading comprehension exercises for them so they can, you can assign them passages and they can go in and read the passages and answer the questions. And there's a really wide variety of those. Another really great resource is Newsela, N-E-W-S-E-L-A. And what's great about that is they have a lot of current events and kind of nonfiction articles, and you can get the same article at a bunch of different Lexile levels.
Wow.
So really, if you wanted to talk about it as a family, you could give, you could print out versions that are appropriate for your, all your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could each read their own and then you could talk about it. And
that'd be, that'd be a great way to cover current events and those types of things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. They have current events and then they also have things like articles about penguins or, you know.
Okay.
So you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. All those things. Okay. Are you okay with another question?
Sure. Sure.
It says, how do the results compare to the Iowa State Standard testing? My son took the Iowa test at the end of fifth grade and then his MAP testing at the end of seventh. I'm curious how closely I can compare the growth between the two. It's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. I am not sure. There are a couple different versions of the Iowa test around, and some are older and some are newer, and that could be an issue. I don't have a straight comparison, unfortunately. I mean, the Iowa it's a good test. It's well written and all that. I don't want to knock it. There are some older versions that people are using, and as you get older, as tests get older, kids are taught more now. And there are the nation's report card. The government does studies, and we can see that kids definitely know more math now than they did, say, in the 90s.
Hmm.
Usually, the Iowa is not quite that old, so it's probably fairly comparable, I would expect.
Okay.
But I don't have any data
really
directly linking them. So.
Yeah. And I mean, they're all norm reference, but like you said, it depends on the date of the test and where norm references are based.
Exactly. Yes.
So,
yes.
So yeah. So if you can figure out when the test was norm referenced, that's probably, I guess, the baseline for figuring out.
Right.
At least the closest for that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So taking that, so you've got it's the full map score then that you can put into the Khan Academy, or was it the RIT?
All your math subscores. So that where you are with the different subjects varies, or with the different subtopics within math.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Michelle said, great to know. Thanks.
Okay.
So Khan Academy does it cover just the math then that's with that score, or does it cover other subjects as well?
It's just the Khan Academy just does math.
Okay. And they have branched out into, I guess, science, but if you're not doing the science score, then I guess it doesn't compare.
Right. Well, they don't have the mappers. They don't have this feature for the science, for anything else but math. Khan Academy does cover a lot of stuff. They've got business classes and coding.
I know.
Every
time I look at it, it's like, you added something new.
Right.
So, yeah. And if you don't know what we're talking about, Khan Academy, just Google it. But a lot of parents who homeschool use it as a resource, lots of video-based instruction, and it's completely free. So if it works out for your student, that works out really well. And then, so do you have any additional advice with the Lexile score and how to use that with instruction?
Well, I like to use it a few ways. I use it, there is a tool you can get on Lexile.org where you can put in a text snippet and they'll give you a Lexile score for that. And I think that can be a nice way if you're, trying to decide which textbook is right for your kid.
Yes.
Especially if they are a struggling reader, you could take a snippet and, because I've noticed with my own kids that the level of difficulty of the reading for, say a math book can vary really dramatically.
Yeah, and you don't even think about text in a math book, but that really does make a difference if your student is trying to process that information. And even though they could probably understand the math concept, if it's written in a way that they can't understand it, then it's like a foreign language.
Exactly. Yeah. I have one kid who she just hates math books that use too many of those big long words. And so we've really learned to shop for that.
I would even recommend, I think a lot of curriculum providers have like samples on their websites. If you could like cut and copy and paste into that, that would make your job a whole lot easier and try to
explore
some of those and break down what may work. That's great.
And it's also, help for if you're going to pick, if you like to use living books for history or, having that Lexile level can really help you do a better job of selecting good books for your kids.
Something a librarian would know about, books. Do they keep track of those types of things? I'm always wondering as we're a librarian.
Some library websites have them. You can also, if you go to Amazon, they will list the Lexile level for most children's books.
Huh.
Yeah. And when you are doing that, something to keep in mind is that you want to be maybe a little bit on the low end of the Lexile level. If your goal is for your child to learn from the reading and not be stretching their reading skills.
Yes.
Yeah, you want to be a little bit on the low side so it's so that they can be focusing on the content.
Yeah, I saw that a range was given in there.
Right.
So you have an upper and lower range
to
work with.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is there any use for the RIT score, or how do parents, that's just for progress, basically?
That's for progress, and it does relate to the learning statements. The main thing, once you get familiar with the RIT score, then it's useful for a lot of things. Until you're familiar with it, it's sort of just, it's all Greek. But it is, it's a nice way to talk about your child's growth without making it about the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
So just be like, okay, you are 5 points higher in
conversation.
And it can be just that's what they did. And it doesn't need to be about, because that can be especially tough for kids who either if they're the 99th percentile or if they're, kind of on the low end, that those comparisons are kind of discouraging because either there's nowhere for them to go or they're just, you know, maybe whoever, you know, the way that they're going to have a hard time catching up. So they don't need to compete against everybody else. They can work on their own. Yeah.
Right. And that's, and it really, that's how you're measuring progress. And I think as a parent too, we tend to get frustrated if we're seeing that the percentile score is going down, but the thing we really need to focus on is they are learning. Exactly. And, you know, we used to do that with my son. He was in swimming. It was a great sport because it was like, oh, your time increased, you know, or you got faster. And we always only compared it to him, not, you know, well, you came in last again. But it didn't matter. It was your time and, you did the, you know, you improved. That's right. Important.
Yeah. And as we're talking about growth mindset, we know more and more that it's important to talk to kids, to teach kids to run their own race.
Yes, because
you can't control what everybody else does. You can't control how you compare, but you can control your own learning and your own effort.
Yes. So, yeah, that's true. Yeah. So give us some examples of how you use the scores for your kids in your own homeschooling.
Well, let's see. I love to use the Lexile to help pick out books for my kids, to help them find things that they're going to find that will be a nice level for them that they'll enjoy reading and will stretch them and maybe teach them some vocabulary. I have found the grammar test, language usage test, to be really helpful in kind of targeting where we are with that, because I've been it took me a while to see the light with being really, my oldest is one of those kids who just picks it all up.
Oh, yes, yeah. Love those kids.
Everyone's a little bit more instruction with that. And so the language usage was really helpful in giving me some direction about where we needed to pay the most attention. Mm. So we've found some good curriculum for that. And then, yeah, the math has been interesting because it's, it helps us kind of decide, evaluate our curriculum. That's the main thing we use the math for. And to see what's working for us and maybe what isn't and that kind of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's good. Yeah. Cause math is a tough subject to pick curriculum for. I found I've worked with parents and I've even tutored in math and, because so many different publishers approach it in a different way too. And which is kind of nice because then you can kind of pick what works best, but you have to try a whole lot of stuff before you figure out what works.
Yeah. And there's so much variety, you know, there's rumors about this one is a year ahead and that one is a year behind and
Yeah.
Hard to switch programs, but yeah.
Yeah, and some are very heavy in reading, and others just have, you know, the examples, and you're expected to just figure it out in between the lines and interpret it.
We've had some frustrations with that, some of the programs where they don't, you're supposed to fail first, and then they'll teach you how to do it, that kind of
thing. And some kids don't do very well with failure. So that's the best way to start.
Right. Yeah. Oh,
definitely. So any other words of advice on how you've used your testing results and or how it's helped with your own homeschooling?
I think the main thing, I like that I can fairly quickly get some really practical results about my kids and that I think a challenging thing for some kids is the fact that they do get about half right and half wrong. But what's nice about that is I think that it's really healthy for kids to be in a situation where they have that, you know, they're working hard at things and it's doable. I mean, that they are able to, it's not so hard that they can't have some success, but that they are feeling a little bit of struggle because I think that we have a culture where sometimes things, maybe they don't ever get that. And that can be either everything is way too hard or it's just too easy. And so I think that that's really a good experience for kids to take a test and have it be challenging. And so I think that's one of my favorite things about it is that every kid does get that that right amount of challenge for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I don't think any other test that I've ever heard of does that.
Right.
It's an
unusual feature.
Yeah.
One of those things you could only do that you couldn't have done it 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Look, gotta love technology.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's helping us to learn and mm-hmm. learn more about ourselves as well.
Right.
So resources, additional resources that you may have to share with our parents. And I definitely want to bring up your website.
Okay.
And let them know how to find you at affordabletest.com.
Yes.
And let me, here, there we go. There. So, I mean, you've got lots of information on your website. Mm-hmm. I poured over it earlier and came up with some general questions, but all the questions that I've asked Ellen are on this page too. She's done a very good job of making sure all your questions get answered and how to contact her. And is there anything else that you want everyone to know about just finding you and using the resources? You know, you're scheduling probably for end of year testing right now, or?
Right. Right now we're very busy with end of year testing. We'll be testing through June 15th.
Okay.
We are testing, we book in as soon as 24 hours in advance.
Okay.
And right up through June 15th. And then we don't offer testing through the summer because the test isn't normed for the summer. So it doesn't meet those requirements. And then we pick up again August 15th with fall testing.
Okay. So if a parent wants to call you in the summer, and they can still schedule for the fall, or do you wait? And okay.
Yes. Right. Yes. And we will have that science test in the fall we're excited about. That's supposed to be a really great science test. So we're glad to be able to offer that.
Mm-hmm. And that is that for all grade levels, or is that just second grade through and on up?
It's third grade on up, third through 12.
All right.
Yeah. And that will be, if someone needed it, we can also offer the test in Spanish.
Oh, that's a good.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we can't offer proctoring in Spanish. So, but mm-hmm. the child could take the test in Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah. And we are, it meets requirements in Florida and Virginia and North Carolina and Washington and Ohio, mm-hmm. Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Florida. We do offer it for any families that have the Gardner Scholarship, which is a scholarship that special needs families can get in Florida and mm-hmm. use for homeschooling. We are in the Step Up for Students store, and so the scholar shop, and so that's families who are involved in that can access our testing and use their Gardner Scholarship money.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Let's see.
Sure, get it all in.
Right.
And
we're happy to work with groups. We'd be happy to, we are able to work with co-ops and with, if tutors who have, if you're teaching math or reading in a group, we're happy to work with you to offer, and we can give you a group rate for your students.
Okay.
So,
All right.
That's,
so like if they're in a co-op or.
Right. A co-op or sometimes or a tutorial or, there's so many different names for those kinds of things.
Right.
Or even just, if you have a group of families that want to get together and test, we're happy to give you, facilitate that and give you a group rate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's mm-hmm. great. Well, our hour is up. I know I told you this was going to be fast.
Yeah.
I hope it was. This was just amazing information. I know I've just taken a little look at this test, but my kids are kind of out of that range now.
Right.
So definitely not a resource I can use, but I'm hoping that our parents and our audience will take advantage of this test that you offer, because it definitely fills the necessity void where you're just required to test, but why not just test with something that you can actually use the results from to help with your instruction.
Exactly.
And also, if you're writing an IEP, the RIT score can be your baseline for your students' educational progress. So there's so many applications in that. And then, like you said, the 30 to 60 pages, wow, of catalogs of things that you can do. You've got my mind swimming, and I hope a lot of you have enjoyed just kind of learning about the MAP test and everything that Ellen had to share. And you can find her at affordabletest.com. So thanks again, Elaine. This was great. And I just thank you for sharing all this information.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Great.
So we're going to continue on with this strain next week. We are going to talk about how neurodevelopmental evaluations help homeschool instruction. And Dr. Jan Bedell, who is also the chair of the SPED Homeschool Board of Directors, is going to be joining me. And we're going to be talking about those types of evaluations, which aren't academic. They are a little different. And so she's going to talk to us about what they help reveal, that if you have a struggling student and you don't know why they're struggling, neurodevelopmental tests can really help you in that area. So we're excited about that. So thank you to the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially funding our broadcast, and also for viewers like you who give on our website at spedhomeschool.com. So let's keep this conversation going all week. Thank you for joining us live, or if you are watching on a recorded session or listening on our podcast, we are grateful for you being in our community. And we talk about all these wonderful things all week long in the support group that we have here on Facebook. So thanks, everybody, and good night. And we'll see you again next week.